Tatum, right wing. He'll drive and kick. Smart, wide open three, left side. Hit it! Marcus Smart coming alive tonight. The Celtics have their largest lead, 88-65.
We're actually going to talk a little hoops. It's my brother Lou DiBiase. He's looking for a basketball expert. I'm like, well, this guy can't do it, and this guy can't do it. I'm like, let's call Lou. Lou knows hoops, except when it comes to Ben Simmons. What's up, bro?
How's it going? Yeah. Well, wasn't I ever really a Ben Simmons guy?
Nah, maybe not.
I was like,
no, you. Yes, you were. Fan. You, but that he's the guy we've had our most battles on. But anyways.
Yeah, I mean, I would say though it was more anti Jimmy Butler than it was pro Ben Simmons.
Before, that's right. Before we get into some hoops, maybe a little football. This just came across my timeline 1 minute ago, and I can't go another minute without at least mentioning it. There is a story I'm reading that. Heinz, of course, ketchup, right? Heinz is creating a custom-flavored ketchup machine like you see with soda machines at restaurants where, like, you can hit the touch screen where, okay, I want the cherry vanilla, and I'll mix it with something else. So, like, intense mango, touch of jalapeno, steak sauce, so, like, you're going to be able to have a custom ketchup machine.
That's gross.
I can't decide whether I love this idea or hate this idea.
I mean, I like the concept of taking that soda machine, which has all the varieties, and opening that up to other things. Maybe even condiments where it's like ketchup or ranch, blue cheese, Thousand Island, whatever you want.
Yeah.
But just all kinds of ketchup to me. I already don't like ketchup on its own. I don't think ketchup is good enough to have other varieties in a machine. I think that's wild.
You don't think...
I also, again, open-minded. I kind of love the boldness of it.
You don't think you would like mango ketchup?
Ketchup itself on its own isn't really that. I don't even like, some people like mayo and ketchup together, like mayo ketchup. Heinz does that. I think that's vile too.
Okay, so here's what it is. You get to pick a base sauce. So ketchup, ranch, steak sauce, or barbecue. And then you get to add an enhancer, such as jalapeno, smoky chipotle, buffalo, mango. There's intensity levels. So
that's a little different. That's kind of more what I was describing. That I kind of support Heinz a little bit more on. But if it was only straight up just ketchup flavors and those were my options, I'm avoiding that machine.
All right. I'm going to do more research on this. Lou DiBiase at DiBiase LOE, Locked On Eagles, but he knows his hoops too. And I wanted to talk some NBA playoffs here. The Celtics win last night. Should they be favored to win the series? Because in some places, Lou, I think they now are, or it's close to a 50-50.
Yeah, the fact that, I mean, Jaylen Brown said, don't let us get one, and people started to roll their eyes when, of course, the Heat are up 3-0. It just seems like Jimmy Butler has his team in a mental spiral like he does for most teams in the playoffs with his success over the last few years. But they dropped two games in a row, and suddenly the Celtics team, which I already think was deeper than the Heat, they already have more star power. I mean, obviously Jimmy Butler's been maybe the best player in the playoffs outside of Jokic, but they have, you know, Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown on fire right now, and you're getting 20-plus point performances from Derek White and Marcus Smart. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, the Heat probably – I don't know if the Heat would be probably still favored, but, man, I'm probably picking the Celtics right now. I would probably put my money on Boston. Miami let this become a series, and that's big time. All the momentum right now is on the Celtics side.
And the Heat with these injuries, right? Like, all their guards are hurt.
Yeah,
right? Like, Gabe Vincent missed the game, and Caleb Martin got hurt during the game. They have Lowry, but, but they're back to what we thought they were going into the playoffs. Recently, it's been, well, the whole team's performing, right? Like, look at the team basketball on display. It feels like they're back to Jimmy Butler has to put his cape on and be Michael Jordan, or else they're not going to win.
And that was the team for most of the regular season. A lot of it had to do with injuries, but you also saw it in the play-in game. People forget, I mean, it wasn't that long ago the Atlanta Hawks beat them in that first play-in game, and they were on the brink of losing the second one to the Chicago Bulls. So this Miami Heat team has definitely been up and down. Were they a true 8 seed? Absolutely not. They've been in the conference finals and the finals multiple times over the last 4 years. But at the same time, they've had this issue throughout the year, and Jimmy Butler had to play hero, and yesterday, what, in 34 minutes, he only comes out with 14 points. So, you know, that definitely was a dud. You can't ask him to do everything, but you know, last night, he really wasn't doing much of anything, though, either.
Lou DiBiase at DiBiase LOE. What is the more compelling finals, Celtics Nuggets or Heat Nuggets?
I mean, for me, I definitely like to switch it up, and I like the NBA right now is becoming a league where basically anybody can win. It didn't feel like that for a while because of Kevin Durant being in Golden State. So I think it would be cool to see, you know, the Heat and Nuggets. It's a different kind of finals, and you know you're going to get a champion that you haven't seen in, you know, a long time since LeBron was with Miami and with Denver. They've never won it. So I think that part is an interesting storyline. From a pure basketball perspective, though, and if you like offensive basketball, if you like entertainment in that way, I'd probably lean more Celtics-Nuggets. Either way, though, Denver's probably going to be the favorite heading into that series. They just look like a team that it was like a young team for years. You're saying, okay, give them a year or two. They're going to figure it out. They were competing, but they would lose to more experienced teams like Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And now it kind of feels like they hit that stride. And if Jamal Murray plays like he did in the conference finals, no matter who comes out of the East, it's going to be tough.
Yeah. I'm trying to figure out if nationally, I'm a Nuggets fan, so yeah. For me, they always are. But are they compelling themselves? Are they interesting? Because I watch them and think they play exciting basketball. Jokic is like throwing up, you know, they're not even shots. They're like lobs that he's just throwing up into the air and they just somehow go in. I feel like that's fun basketball, but I get why there's a sentiment out there that they're not interesting because they're, in terms of like the characters and the ego, like the basketball's fun. I feel like the rest of it is definitely not.
Yes. Yeah, if you're an actual basketball fan that is taking the time to sit down and watch the Denver Nuggets, they're a very exciting team. They shoot the three ball. Jamal Murray is exciting as they come when it comes to a backcourt star. Jokic, yes, when you see that he's this plodding, you know, big center and the way he's, you know, just slow and his shooting motion is wonky. Nothing about him looks fun. But then when you actually watch his, and me overall, I'm just like, even as a Philadelphia guy, I don't love Joel Embiid, and I don't really get overly excited even watching him. I mean, he won the MVP, but Jokic isn't your typical center. I mean, as you mentioned, it's like the orbit around him, his passing ability. Some of the shots that he pulls off and his creativity is really fun. But, yeah, I think it's just like nationally, casual NBA fans normally are not watching the Denver Nuggets on West Coast time. Jokic isn't a LeBron James type of name still, even though he's won two MVPs. I just still don't think he carries that kind of excitement and weight. Is it fair? No. But, yeah, so I think they're not getting that respect, and people probably don't love the Denver Nuggets, but if you actually take the time to watch them, they're as entertaining as they come.
That's until they become a dynasty, of course. They rattle off three straight championships. They'll be interesting.
Let's get one ring, man. I know they could be like Golden State hitting that stride, or they could be the Thunder. You get to the finals once, and then you never know. They never get back.
Evan cut it out. He said they could be like Golden State. That's a quote.
Make sure you don't get my other point in there. Yeah.
Exactly. That's a quote, that they could be like Golden State. And then, you know, Michael Porter Jr. is their Harrison Barnes, and then LeBron comes.
Yeah.
Or Durant.
Right. Hey, if LeBron was going to leave the Lakers, although it would feel dirty now, but for a long time, Denver was that sneaky team, like the best team that free agent stars would never consider, and now everybody probably wants it.
Real quick, just to put a wrap on our hoops talk here, LeBron, do you buy it? Or my guess is this is a play for something, but I don't know what. Is it a play for the Lakers to, you know, go get a certain star to go with him in AD? Is it, or is it a play for him to get out? Because he's got a year left on his deal that is, like, it's not like a player option. It's a year left. And if he wants to go, like, is this the first step towards, like, telling the team that, like, hey, you're going to let me go wherever I want?
Yeah, it's kind of all over the place, and some people thought he was trying to almost control the narrative so the headlines aren't about him getting swept in the Western Conference Finals. It's not all about the Denver Nuggets. It's on LeBron, you know, his retirement decision. But I'm on the other side where I agree with you. It might be either, hey, go get me Kyrie Irving with the Lakers next year, or I'm not coming back, right? Although I feel like he should have learned his lesson with the Westbrook experiment. I know Kyrie's better than Westbrook right now, but, you know, why did they get better and go from a 13 seed to a Western Conference Finals team? Because they got deep during the deadline. They found that bench with young role players. Don't milk that now and get rid of it all for Kyrie Irving. But maybe that's what the play is. Or, yeah, maybe he wants to leave because his last big thing, now that he has a scoring title, he's got four rings, is to play with Bronny. But then I saw, like, in the media the other day, he talked about, you know, that's up to Bronny's decision. It's not up to him. Mm-hmm. So I really have no idea. He's in a really interesting spot, but I think no matter what, he's not retiring. The comment of him saying he's better than 90 to 95% of players still in the NBA, there's no way that guy to me is hanging it up if he's saying that.
We found out he was playing through the entire playoffs with a torn tendon in his foot, and he scored 40.
Ridiculous, considering the 40-point performance he had that final game.
Do you know who the betting favorite is for him if he were to leave the Lakers?
Tell me it's not Golden State.
No, they're like fourth. You don't want that to happen? I really want that to happen. You don't want to see Steph and LeBron together?
No, it's just like that was the team he always went up against. It just feels very anticlimactic if he ends his career in Golden State. I don't know.
We know it's over.
LeBron versus Steph. Yeah, I know, but it would just be like if Peyton Manning ended his career with the Patriots. It's like, that's not fun.
I know what you mean.
It feels weird.
Yeah. I still would love it. I would love to see those, just to see what it looks like. I just want to see what it looks like, those two playing together. Betting favorite, in fact, they're co-favorites. The Knicks, because of course, right? Like, they'll never get them, but they're always the favorite. And the Sixers.
Hey, I will say, I don't know why he would leave LA for Philly, but I will say, I mean, you're leaving one injured star big to another one.
Embiid is better.
I don't know, though. Healthy? I'd still take Anthony Davis.
Wow.
Yeah. No, honestly.
I think that's a hot take.
The Anthony Davis of this year that had 30-plus pretty much every game to get them in the postseason, I would take that Anthony Davis over Joel Embiid. But the Knicks, I will say one thing about that. LeBron did that final game with D-Wade. He did say it was always going to end here or the Garden. So it wasn't like the Knicks were never on his radar.
Stop.
I'm not saying he's going to the Knicks, but it was open.
He's not going to the Knicks. He's not going to the Knicks. This is what the Knicks do.
Fans riled up, man. I know, that's what I'm doing. I'm trying to get them going.
Yep, they think they're getting LeBron, and they will get Darius Garland instead, some player that 90% of our listeners haven't heard of. One
fourth-year player.
Yeah. One quick football question. I've been spending the show on James Cook. What is the ceiling? Not even what the ceiling is. What is the bar for him to meet this year? He's right now number one on the depth chart. He has not started ever in his career. That includes in college. Like Georgia, he was the backup. So you watched a lot of him year one. You watched a lot of him coming into the league. And I know you liked him coming into the league. But as a pass catcher, for most, last year he was a better runner than pass catcher. So he's going to start on a team that doesn't use running back. Like, they just don't do it. But when they do, I guess, what do you think it's going to look like for him?
Yeah, he's kind of, to make an Eagles comparison for me at least, because that's, what I covered was Miles Sanders when he came into the league. It was very similar with Cook, where they both have the style, the athleticism, where I would say they're a receiving type back, but really they weren't all that involved in college or at the pros. But I think to take that next step, that's the way you use him, because Cook was extremely efficient, as you mentioned, running the football last year. But with his frame and also with the offense they have, he's never going to have a heavy workload. And he's in a trio with Harris and Hines. But I think to me, to get the most out of Cook, it is having him become that receiving running back. Again, how often will Josh Allen actually target a running back? That goes without, that's left to be said. But I think the ceiling's high if he can become a good receiver. As you mentioned, the efficiency is there. The explosive play rate was really high last year. I like James Cook a lot coming out of Georgia. He was actually my top running back that year. So I know he's got to stay healthy for me, but I'm really excited. There was somebody tweeted out, I thought it was a fun comparison. It's like he's store-bought Jahmyr Gibbs. But I think he can be even better than Gibbs from Detroit this year. So, I'm really excited about Cook's ceiling.
Just taking notes for all the fantasy leagues I'm in with Lou. He would take James Cook above Jahmyr Gibbs.
Yep. Take your notes.
Although he's getting Bijan anyway, so that won't even come up.
That's right. I have the first pick.
Yeah.
Bijan Robinson season for
me. You're getting Bijan. All right. Thanks, Lou. At DiBiase, LOE, and always a good follow. Thanks, Lou.
Cool. All right. Thanks, man.
We will see each other tonight, tomorrow. I forget. I don't remember my schedule. Got 10 minutes here. And we reset on Cook. Our poll, at Sneaky Joe Sports, what's the bare minimum for Cook to clear this year? Be a compliment to Harris, be as good as Singletary, be an upgrade over Singletary, or be so good that you kill the first round running back talk? My answer is upgrade over Singletary. I think it's fair to put expectations on James Cook. He is so athletic, versatile, no mileage, great success in limited touches last season, and in an expanded role, you never know quite what that's going to look like. One other number, there are a lot of numbers used to break down, you know, running backs and what their usage looks like and what they're facing and what they average. And one key difference between Devin Singletary and James Cook last year that can help explain why Cook was so much higher in yards per carry and explosive run rate. Although explosive run rate, I think, is just more straight speed. But stacked box carry percentage. So Devin Singletary faced a stacked box on almost 9% of his carries last year. Not a lot. But Cook was down around 5%. Almost double. It's not a high percentage, so it's not something that I want to completely excuse Singletary of for being lower, but it's a factor. And you'll probably see Cook's number in that regard go up a little bit. The Bills were running him, almost to use like a hockey comparison, when you put a defenseman out there only against easy matchups, and the numbers look a little bit better. That was Cody Franzen for a long time. Cody Franzen would have the lowest matchup difficulty imaginable, and then he put up incredible numbers, and he was the one guy I would always want to ignore the numbers on. There's no way. I'm watching him play fourth lines, and you know he's doing fine there. And then the moment he would go against the top line, he'd get blown by. And you know maybe this is a version of that to make a very bad comparison to Cody Franzen from James Cook. I don't even know how that just happened, but Cook's role difficulty is going to go up. He was being used in situations where defenses were expecting pass, and Singletary was too, but more often in those situations where here comes the run, it was Singletary out there, not Cook. So what will Cook do when he now is in those situations? Or will he not? Will it still be Harris? The Pro Football Focus Game Simulator. 12-5 was the last one I ran. Let's run it again. The Pro Football Focus Game Simulator for the Bills season. I've had 12-5. I've had 16-1. I've had 9-8. A little bit all over the place, but usually it's somewhere in the 12-13 win range. All right, this most recent simulation as we run through. Wins over the Jets and the Raiders and the Commanders and the Dolphins. Off to a 4-0 start, 5-0 start. With a win over the Jaguars. Interestingly, though, they have not yet scored 30 points. But the defense has showed up. Lost to the Giants on Sunday Night Football in Week 6. Bills simulation at PFF. Week 7, Week 8 wins over New England and Tampa Bay. And there we go. Look at this game. This would be an all-time classic. Week 9 at the Cincinnati Bengals. Bills win 38-37. 1-point win, shootout, back and forth, in their building, then wins over the Broncos and the Jets. So if you're keeping track, I believe that's 10-1. 10-1 after week 11. But hold on. Not so good after that. Lost to Philadelphia. Lost to Kansas City. Lost to Dallas. Lost to the Chargers. Lost to New England. They're 10-6 going into the final game of the year where they beat the Miami Dolphins, which at 11-6 with 2 wins over the Dolphins, 2 wins over the Jets, I probably think that's still the division title, but maybe it's one that comes down to tiebreakers. I like doing this for the stats, though. Reacting live to what these numbers look like. Josh Allen, 4,900 yards passing, 37 touchdowns, 12 interceptions. Great. Better than last year, even. Stephon Diggs, 91 receptions, 12 touchdowns, 1,300 yards. Fine. Gabe Davis. This is a big year for Davis. In a contract season, this is the type of year that I think would price him out for the Bills. They would not be able to afford keeping him if he had this season. 75 receptions, 1,042 yards, and 8 touchdowns. It's really strong. Number 3 in receptions. And this guy keeps popping up in PFF. to be number three in the Bills in receptions. Deontay Hardy, 66 catches, 781 yards, and 5 touchdowns. Let's talk about Hardy for a second. I think that's going to work. I think that's going to be the guy. I get it for Kincaid. I think in the future, he's not only the number three target on this team, I think he's number two. But Sal asked me earlier in the week, who do you think will lead the Bills in terms of snap count in the slot? And my number one answer for him was Deontay Hardy. I overvalue these guys that thrive playing limited snaps. You know, I did that with Gabe Davis a little bit. And then Gabe Davis, you know, maybe there was an ankle injury, but first season and a full workload, didn't go that great. It was okay. And, you know, I'm thinking that way with James Cook a little bit. And Hardy, for me, is kind of the same. He just did it on a different team. Deontay Hardy was top 10 in the NFL in target percentage per route run. Almost 30% of the time he ran a route, they were throwing him the football. All the other players around him in that number are superstars. It's Jefferson. It's Metcalf. It's A.J. Brown. It's Travis Kelce. It's Deontay Hardy. He was good when he was on the field for New Orleans. But he wasn't on the field all the time for New Orleans. You know, he missed 13 games last year, 4 games the year before that, 7 games the year before that, and 2 games in his rookie year. He's missed games. He's small, 5'6", 170. But, man, if he can stay healthy, I think he's the guy. Because he is fast, and he is quick, and he is the type of player I have been begging for in this offense for 4 years. I don't think they've ever had a guy with this exact skill set that has played an important role on the team. He's kind of like Isaiah McKenzie, but he goes beyond Isaiah McKenzie. He is somebody, Hardy, that you can hand the ball off to on jet sweeps, throw screens to, can return like McKenzie. But the downfield element of his game, I mean, that is there. That it was just never the case with McKenzie. McKenzie was quicker than he was fast. Hardy has both. And I don't think they've had a guy that is as fast and quick as a combo on this team under Sean McDermott. But again, he's not somebody that's really ever started, and he's been someone who has not also been very healthy. So I'm in love with the skill set. I wonder how likely it is to come to fruition, because that's the guy I've been wanting. Whenever we've talked over the years of, can I get a poor man's Tyreek Hill? I want to make a better comparison than Tyreek Hill. I don't want to compare Dalton Kincaid to Travis Kelce, and I don't want to just compare Deontay Hardy to Tyreek Hill. But I've been wanting to see the Bills get a Tyreek Hill. Watching him with the Chiefs, the guy that is just terrifying. He gets the ball in open space, and you are, like, hands over your head, like, uh-oh. Oh, no. Oh, no, 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 no. Like, that's Tyreek Hill. And the Bills have never had a guy like that. I don't even think they've had a guy with potential to be a guy like that. And Hardy, I think, even though the potential is not super high, I think it's there. I think he is a guy where, uh-oh, ball's in Deontay Hardy's hands. Uh-oh, no, no, no. Oh, here he comes. Oh, he's in the open space. That's Deontay Hardy. That also gets open down the field, like Tyreek Hill does. Again, I'm trying not to compare him to Tyreek Hill, but that's the player I'm envisioning. That's the role. Let me do that. It's the role I'm envisioning more than the player. He's not going to be Tyreek Hill, of course. But can he be the type of player the Bills haven't had? Kincaid, if everyone wants to tell me he's Cole Beasley, okay, they've had Cole Beasley. And that was good. It was great. And I think Kincaid's going to be great. But Hardy does things that they haven't had ever with this team. So when I see on the simulator 66 receptions, 781 yards, all right, I'm in. That's my slot receiver. That's the guy I want. He is everything you'd want in a slot receiver. He is someone that can move all around the field, can kick out outside, and not just be a decoy like Beasley and McKenzie would be. He is someone that in the slot can get open against zone coverage a little bit better than Isaiah McKenzie could. Not as good as Beasley, but better than McKenzie. And he can run from the slot a full route tree. He can run deep posts. He can run those, you know, those vertical routes where you kind of bend to the outside and start from the slot but end up running up the sidelines. He can run up the seam. He can run a full route tree much better than any guy they've had in that position. But can he stay healthy? Because I think the player is dynamite, the skill set is dynamite, and if he can play a full workload, I think he's your guy in the slot. This PFF simulator has Dalton Kincaid 28 catches for 325 yards. I am not predicting he'll be that low. I'm definitely predicting he'll be lower than a lot of people. I will say this, though. I'm mentally preparing for a season that low for Dalton Kincaid, and I will not. I'm going to make you a promise right now on May 26th. If this season goes by and he has a year like that, 28 catches for 325, I'm going to be the guy that's telling you, don't panic. This was in the cards. This was possible. This was maybe even a likely outcome that he's going to disappoint you in year one. But don't hold that against him for years 2 through 7. That he still has every chance to be an elite tight end in the NFL. And do not judge the player's career on his rookie season, especially at this position. So 28 for 325. No one in their right mind would take that for Dalton Kincaid. Zero touchdowns, by the way. Nobody would take that for Dalton Kincaid. And everyone listening to that probably thinks that's crazy. They don't know. And I don't think it's that crazy. Even though I probably have him closer to like 40 catches for 500, 600 yards, and at least 4 or 5 touchdowns. I would definitely be higher than this simulator is. 803-0550 is the phone number. Jody Biasi, Extra Point Show. We'll hear from Kyle Poso. Take more of your calls after this on WGR.
Elam had a tough year last year. You know, obviously Trey Davis was injured at the beginning of the year. He, like, lost the starting job to Christian Benford, who was, you know, later pick. And then at the end of the year, it kind of felt like he was starting to put it together, and then he had that interception in the playoff game. And I think it makes sense because it's a very zone-heavy secondary. And what I remember from Elam in college is he was a man corner. He's this, like, long, physical corner. So it kind of made sense that it might have taken some time for him to really get accustomed to playing in the NFL.
Mina Kimes. The great Mina Kimes. Memorial Day weekend. Jeremy says he's put his boat in the water and that I am definitively not swimming this week in that lake. I'm not so sure. I still am not so sure. I mean, he's near the water, so he would know better than me. But Monday, I got 3 days of the lake warming up, and I am not trusting the National Weather Service when they say 51 degrees for the lake. 30 feet deep is where they're measuring this thing. Who needs that? 51 degrees at 30 feet. So what does that mean? Is it going to be 15 degrees warmer by the shore? Because I can do high 60s for water.
How long do you need to be in there to consider it swimming?
Well, I wouldn't be swimming anyway. I would be standing in the water with a drink. Maybe throwing a football around, maybe throwing a frisbee around. So, we'll see. I'm not so sure. How much can a lake warm in 3 days? How much can... This isn't even like the lake. I just need the shore. That's it. That's not that deep. That warms up very quick. I think.
I think we need to go... We need to go at least knee high up for you.
I need a lake scientist on this. On like what temperature can rise in 3 days, and why are we not measuring the shore? Waist waist deep. That's what we need. 803-0550 is the phone number. Mina Kimes there on Kyer Elam. Elam taking a step this year. I mean, Mina putting voice to that. And he got better as the year went on. That's correct. And he got better with man coverage as the year went on. Actually, what's interesting about Kimes, I think Anthony from Cover One pointed this out, not from Kimes, from Elam, is that he came into the league with the reputation of great man corner, and he's got some work to do in zone. And last year, he actually was pretty good in zone, but when defenses would move their receivers around to get Elam matched up one-on-one, that's where he was struggling. So I wonder, you know, if the season went on and that's what he was getting better at, if next year he can take another jump and be like, okay, this guy is, he doesn't have to be an all-pro, he doesn't have to be great, but just, this is a good starting corner that they got. But Mina also points out in her clip on her podcast that the Bills drafting as of late starting to look a little suspect. And this draft class maybe will be big for turning that around. Elam's year two will be big for turning that around. The Bills getting not just good players, role players out of their drafts, but impact players. Impact players. And I don't know the last time they've done that. Elam is not that yet. Cook is not that yet. Bernard is not that yet. Shakir is not that yet. Benford, it was, again, like, good role player, not an impact player. Rousseau is not that yet. Basham, no. Brown, no. Epinesa, no. Zach Moss, no. Gabe Davis? That's for the fourth round, yeah. And the draft before that, Ed Oliver, Cody Ford, Devin Singletary, Dawson Knox. Star-level player, they really don't have one out of any of their picks in the last four drafts. Impact player, which I should stick to, which was the term I used, maybe two guys. Maybe Knox and Davis. And that's it. So, Kincaid becoming that? Torrance becoming that? Elam becoming that? Cook? I mean, I'm optimistic. Of those four guys, can they get two or three of them to be like, oh, great players? Because, you know, it's one thing to just, okay, they keep getting guys that contribute, but how about a guy that's going to become a star? Where's Milano? Where are your Milanos? Where are your Wyatt Tellers? Where are those guys? Where are your Trey Whites even? Yeah, first round pick even, but all pro. Oh, look at that. Where are those guys? But again, I think there are four guys between the last two drafts that have a real shot at that. Kincaid, Torrance, Elam, and even Cook, I think. Despite the fact his position it wouldn't mean as much. 803-0550 is the phone number. Calls on the way back. Kyle Poso, if you missed his comments from yesterday, the Sabre captain returning to the Buffalo Sabres, we will bring those to you after this. Jody Biasi, Extra Point Joe, we've got more coming up next from Josh Schmidt and Zach Jones. So stay tuned at 12 here on WGR. Extra Point Show, Joe DiBiase, Sal Capaccio getting an early start on Memorial Day weekend. The Sabres signed Kyle Poso 1 year, $2.5 million on Wednesday. The Sabre captain is back. I love some of his comments about expectations for this team, Stanley Cup standard, and more about, you know, his family's reaction to the decision. Really good stuff from Poso. We're going to bring that to you here if you missed it yesterday. Here is the Buffalo Sabres captain meeting with the media after his brand new one-year contract with the Buffalo Sabres.
Pretty quickly after the season, I took a couple weeks and just allowed myself to decompress and, you know, emotionally reset. And, you know, like you said, I talked to the people that around me that are in the inner circle, and I knew that, you know, my teammates would like me back, and that was definitely a factor. But, you know, it was just sitting down with my wife Danielle and you know, figuring out what the next step would look like. And, you know, it became pretty evident in those conversations that I wanted to play and I was going to come back. And so it happened decently fast.
How much is this also some unfinished business for you, knowing that you came here looking to accomplish something and that job's unfinished, and with this team on the precipice? How much is that unfinished business for you?
There is definitely some unfinished business for sure. And you know, I've been through a lot here, as everybody on this call knows, and I just think we're scratching the surface. And I think that it's pretty evident by what's happened in the playoffs this year that we're not very far from reaching the top of the mountain. And it's something that I had set out to do when I had my introductory press conference, and I did not know how much work was going to have to go into it, but I think that we're extremely close. So definitely some unfinished business, and you know, personally, I would like to be a lot better as well.
You think back to last season. I mean, when you were reflecting on what you wanted to do in the future, I mean, I guess how rewarding was it to see that, I mean, the impact that you had and on all the younger players on this team, you know, not only on the ice, but what you were able to help them up off the ice. And how did that sort of motivate you to come back and continue to help build?
It was a lot. I mean, you guys obviously aren't privy to the conversations that I have with these guys every day, but knowing that I can have an impact on people's lives in a positive way, forget hockey for a second, just the fact that you have a role to be a leader, to be a role model, and to be with these people every day. And they're all such good people. And I think that if you can have that impact on somebody's life, that is so rewarding for me as a person. Like I love teaching. I love, you know, coaching, for lack of a better term, you know, these people to be the best people that they can be. And that's what I try and do every day. And I just try and set it as good of an example as I can. And so it's definitely rewarding to see the progress that we have made as people and as hockey players as well. I think our team, it shows in the way that we play on the ice. So yeah, last year was definitely a rewarding one.
You made a quick reference to it a couple minutes ago, so I want to dive into that a little more here. The world is abuzz with Florida Panthers talk now, and you guys were right there with them all the way to April 4th. What is your takeaway, your lesson from the Panthers? And secondly, what's your thought on what looks like is going to be a Jack versus Sam final, that they're finally going to get that chance?
Well, I'll answer the second part first. They're both good friends. Jack and Sam are both good people. They're good friends of mine. I'm happy for both of them in the success that they've had individually and as a team. And obviously Jack's not there yet. Sam punched his ticket last night, but I'm happy for both those guys, first of all. And to answer your question about Florida, I'll just speak a little bit about us, and I touched on it earlier, but you know, we can't be scared of the expectations. There's going to be expectations next year. You guys know it. Last year there was no expectations, and you know, everybody's writing rosy articles, and you know, this group is a good team. It's becoming a good team, and that's great. But how do you do that with expectations? There's guys that are starting to get bigger contracts. There's guys that are starting to get noticed nationally. There's going to be lofty expectations next year. And I think that we can't run from that. You have to set your goal. And should our goal be to make the playoffs? Should our goal be to be 2 points better than we were this year? No, that's expected. That's expected now. And so you set the goal of winning a Stanley Cup, and then you don't touch that. You don't run and you don't let that weigh you down at all from the day to day in the season. You set that goal, you know that it's there, and then you build from that. And then you take every day at a time and you get better. Like Kevin has always said, like Donnie says, you want to get better every day, but we cannot run from those expectations anymore. Like the time is now. The time is like I said, our window is, I think it's opening, and we have to be prepared for that. And everybody's got to come better, starting with me. And I think that that's an expectation that we have to set.
And just how shocked are you to see the Panthers beat Boston and Toronto and Carolina?
They've been playing playoff games for 2 months. I mean, I think that the Boston series, I watched the first round very closely, and it was very, that series was the most interesting to me because, you know, obviously Boston was a machine all year, and they were the best team in the league by a mile. But Florida had been playing playoff games for a month and a half. They had already played a game seven when they played us down in Florida. That was a game seven. It was tight. It was, you know, nobody wanted to make a mistake. Everybody knew what was at stake in that game. And we came out on the short end of it, and that was so difficult for us. But that was their first taste of it. They had been doing that for 2 months, and I think that Boston, you know, they hadn't played a meaningful game in, I don't know, since October. Like, they just ran over everybody in the league. And I think that once they lost game six, and you kind of looked at their faces and it was like, oh boy, we're one loss away from being out of this thing after the season that we just had. And I think it's really hard to get over that hump psychologically when you haven't been in that situation. And I think Florida's been in there for 2 months and Boston really hadn't had a taste of that.
You know, you as a player, I mean, 4 or 5 years ago, you started making a transition into a kind of a different role. I mean, you still score goals, but you changed, I guess. How have you evolved and what helped you kind of embrace that change that a lot of players can't make, I guess?
I just think I try not to have any sort of ego because I think that's detrimental to your team's culture if you have a bunch of egos, like, it's just not going to be as seamless and the culture is not going to be as good. So I tried to do whatever was asked of me and do it to the best of my ability. But, and part of that this year was playing defense. And I think that Z and I and Krebsy for a lot of the year, we just tried to really embrace that role and do it the best that we could. And in saying that, like I touched on before, like I wasn't as good offensively as I think that I could have been. And that stings for me. And so I'm going to work on some different things this summer to try and make sure that that doesn't happen again. But it's just doing what is required for the team. And this year we were one of the top scoring teams in the league and we needed a little bit more attention to detail on the defensive end. And I tried to provide that.
I'm curious what was different about this decision for you. Obviously, you're kind of weighing whether to play or not to play, but from previous contract negotiations, just having your kids be old enough to kind of maybe want to see dad keep playing or just being at this stage in your life, what was maybe different about this decision?
Sorry. So my son Odie was the first one to find out. And I got a call and I was in my bedroom. I was about to put him to bed and saying that the deal was done. And so he comes out and just brushes his teeth. And I looked at him and I told him that I'm going to come back and play another year. And his reaction was worth it. And sometimes I forget how much it means to them, you know, to my, especially my older two kids. And I told Ellie about 20 minutes later, she was driving back from getting ready for a dance recital. And her and I went for a walk and her and Danielle pulled up in the car. And she, I told them. And then when I heard them driving away, I heard her scream so loud because they were just so happy and excited. And so it definitely is a huge factor in my decision-making, your family, because you're not just thinking about yourself. You're thinking about them and what this means to them as well.
Did you just want a one-year deal? And is it a year-by-year thing now for you as far as your future goes? Is that how you approach it now?
Yeah, it's year-by-year. See how my body feels and go from there. I wouldn't be ready to commit to more than one season at a time beyond this point.
Kyle, as you look at some of your teammates and some of the guys who will be your teammates, they're still playing right now. I mean, are you excited to see J.J. Paterka right now with 9 points at the World Championships in 7 games, and what the Rochester Americans are doing in the conference finals. Kulik, he's played 7 playoff games. He has points in all of them. I mean, just to see, does it excite you to see the experiences, the postseason experiences that so many of your young players are getting right now?
Absolutely. I think first of all, you have to give credit to Kevin for that one. And you know, how he has helped the organization from the top down, and really put an emphasis on prospects, on getting those type of experiences. And, you know, you see it in Rochester and how it's built. And, you know, obviously Jason Karmanos has a big hand in that as well. And it's great to see. It's awesome to see our organization having these experiences, having these successes. And I mean, it's not going to hurt. It's never going to hurt you down the road. So, it's fun to watch. It's going to be fun to watch, these young kids grow up and see what they become. And I think that we're set up extremely well as an organization. Obviously, you know, we have a lot of cap space, we have a lot of prospects, we have a lot of things going for us. And I've definitely been following Rochester and been a huge fan along the way.
Sabres captain Kyle Okposo. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt, more Bills talk, more hockey talk as well, Amerks and whatnot. I'll be back on Tuesday. Have a happy Memorial Day. Sal and I will return on Tuesday. Talk to you then here on WGR.